Calling to order the 1,350th meeting of the Board of Directors of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority. We start with our current public comment period, and our first commenter is Bill Orleans. Bill? There he is. Okay.
Good afternoon, folks. On Monday of this week, at approximately 2 minutes after 9, I boarded an F4 bus to Silver Spring. Not unusual, but I boarded at Greenbelt Station. While I've in the past caught the F4 and also the F6 at Greenbelt Station, generally one doesn't do it. In fact, in reality, it was an R12 in Carrollton. That was okay, but the fare box also didn't work. I've asked the question about the bad signage on our buses for more than a year now. Have sometimes drawn an amused smile from our general manager, whom, by the way, my last opportunity possibly to say goodbye to. I frankly still think it's not too late to encourage him to stay. I think he should stay for a little while, if only in a consultative capacity. But I've never been given an answer why our signage is as bad as it is. I do believe that the most popular route in the Metro bus system is not in service, only to be followed by other bad signages, routes with bad signage. I would like to know, before Mr. Cato leaves, why our signage is so bad. More recently, I've had the experience, and it occurs every week, of boarding a bus wanting to flash my smart card and being told the box doesn't work. I've asked how many boxes on a given day are not working. That's lost revenue. I've not been given an answer to that question. It would seem to me that data should be collected, say, on whichever day last month the board meeting occurred. By now, that data, it should be known and reported internally how much revenue potentially was lost to the system on the day of the last board meeting because X number of fare boxes were out of order. I don't know that I have a right to ask for an answer to this question today, but I would appreciate one. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Orleans. We'll ask staff to look into those issues. And if you'd like to talk to somebody on staff later about some answers, please, Mr. General Manager, if you would pass those issues on to him, it would be nice. Our next commenter is, I'm sorry, do you want to give an answer right now?
Well, I was not going to give him an answer.
I was interested
in the consulting services that he recommended.
Thank you for the offer, sir. Mr. Lynn.
I would like to, you know, I think the questions that were raised were legitimate questions for us to know. So I think beyond just Mr. Orleans knowing, I would like for the board to know. I think those are legitimate questions in terms of the regularity of fare boxes not working, projected. I think the questions are legitimate ones that we all have an interest in having the information.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Linton. Mr. Zimmerman.
I concur. Also, on the first part of Mr. Orleans' questions with regard to the signage, I think we actually have something on the agenda today that comes from the committee report that I'll give that perhaps speaks directly to it.
Well, both of those are issues that could very reasonably come to Mr. Zimmerman's committee on a regular basis. Our second commenter is Roxy Carter. Roxy?
Hi, my name is Roxy Carter, and I've been with Metro for 25 years. I am a recipient of the RIFT, February the 18th. I worked in the Office of Procurement and Materials, one of the offices under the CFO. I want to thank you for allotting me this time to address the board. Out of 9 employees, RIFT, 7 were inventory planners that used to support rail and bus, the maintenance, of the rail cars and buses. I want to bring to your attention the severe impact on the operation. Okay, the question right now is, how many PRs with our purchase requisitions have been processed? But it's really not about what's been processed, but how many have been successfully turned into POs across the operation department. There's approximately 300 PRs that's waiting for approval in bus, and rail is much larger, and their requirement could be three times. Say about 1,000 PRs are out there, and each line could carry up to 10 lines that could easily add up to 10,000 lines. Okay, the phrase of to work around, okay, using purchase cards are being used and increased for buses out of service, maybe as high as $50,000, I don't know, but that's against procurement regulation. There's no competition, therefore affecting small businesses. We have critical items that are also inclusive in the waiting for approval, creating safety issues. There are numerous large procurement projects to be done at the end of the fiscal year that the planners are very much a key in. Okay, fiscal year 09, three planners processed 5,829 lines for a total simplified acquisition. POs awarded a total of $16 million. And that's pretty, excuse my French, damn good for three planners to do this. And I'm quite sure on the rails end, it's probably much larger on that end. My objective, you know, was to supply or the inventory planners is to supply customers with parts to ensure uninterrupted parts with parts available. Now, with this information and everything, there is a serious interruption that is going on. Now, we had also gotten a call from HR, Human Resources, contacted us, and Operation was willing to take on three of the planners, and they have the PCN numbers. But unfortunately, the powers that be intervene and stop that from happening. So what that says to
Ms.
me, and
Carter,
I'm hoping,
Ms. Carter,
am I past 10 minutes,
you're,
sir?
You're past your time, so
oh, I'm
you can
sorry.
Wrap it up. You can finish whatever you're saying. But
okay, well, the solution is I'm urging the board to reconsider and go to the worker bees. I mean, the managers who are involved, hands-on, they know what they're doing. They know the numbers. There may be a miscommunication, or it may be miscommunicated. So this is a vital function that is definitely needed, and I'm telling you, the millions of dollars that you're expecting to save, you're going to surpass that in a deficit. Thank you.
Question for Ms. Carter, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Ms. Carter?
Ms. Carter, if you would stay there, Roxy. Mr. Zimmerman has a question for you.
First, I hope you would submit what you just told us in writing. I think that would be useful to be able to go over and see some of the questions that you raised. Just so I understand, you were RIFed in February?
Yes, sir.
So have you separated from employment now?
Right now, I'm going through the bumping process.
Okay, but so you are still an employee?
I guess you could say. Technically, I guess, until severance hits in there, but I haven't been placed as of yet.
Okay, but you were given notice that your job is being terminated. Is that what you're telling me?
What happened, there was a leak. We were told by the end users that we were going to be RIFed. So we had cleared out our cubicles long before we had gotten the information about us being RIFed.
Have you actually received a notice that your job is being terminated?
Yes. We went through the procedure and everything.
Okay, so that notice was delivered when?
February the 18th, I believe.
And when was it to be effective? In other words, when were you told your job would no longer be there?
They took everything. They stripped us right there that same day. They took our ID badges. We had to sign something. It was immediate that day.
You mean you had no notice at all?
Yes, we did. It was a leak. We
had
a
no
leak.
Official notice. The day you received notice that your job would be eliminated is the day you were.
Yeah, we received a phone call from Local 2, because I belong to Local 2.
I'm not interested in leak. I'm just trying to understand.
No, Local
2.
When
did management tell you your job would be gone?
Management, they came on the 18th, February the 18th. They had all the packets and everything. They gave it to us on that day. We were told like maybe a half an hour before it actually happened, sir.
And you weren't given any notice beyond that for when you
We were given a notice by the leak.
Well, because I asked Ms. Kissel this question, I think, at the last meeting, and my understanding was that there is, you know, notice given to employees and various things done. I mean, I asked the specific question and got a pretty direct answer. So.
What was your specific question?
When we reduce force and yes. we let people go who've been with us, not for cause or a problem, but just because economically we can't support the position anymore,
yes.
They were eliminating for budgetary reasons. Mm-hmm. That, and I at the time told you, you know, in my county, this happens unfortunately, but, you know, we try to give people as much notice as possible and mm-hmm. Work with them. You know, there's usually some weeks, sometimes months involved. Mm-hmm. But maybe I misunderstood. It sounded like Ms. Carter was saying that somebody walked in and told her job wasn't there anymore, and mm-hmm. she left that day. Mm-hmm. Well, yes. Did I misunderstand that?
No, you did not. There's a process, and I'll let Andrea Burnside turn that on.
Yeah, it's on. Okay. Yeah, I believe she's a represented employee in Local 2, and so the process would be we announce the RIFs to the employees all on the same day. So everybody gets notified within probably like a five-hour time frame, depending on the availability of management and rooms to conduct the RIF discussions. Then there's a 60-day administrative leave for Local 2 employees. So they're still on the books as employees for the 60 days, and during that time frame, some bumping occurs based on seniority. So the union, as a courtesy, we notify them shortly before we notify the employees, and that may be what she's referring to as the leak. I'm not sure.
Well, I don't even care about that. I really care about what it is you're doing as management. So you tell them all at the same time your job is being eliminated, and then right. what happens?
There's a process by which people can actually, as Andrea had indicated, there's a two-month paid, 60-day paid administrative leave. Which is under
you mean administrative leave means I don't come to work?
Correct.
Correct.
So how soon is it before I leave the building?
Normally we ask people to leave on the same day.
Right.
So you walk into my office and tell me, sorry, it turns out your job's not going to be here, leave now?
Yes, sir.
Routinely?
That's been the practice we've done over the last couple of RIFs. We give them an opportunity to go back to their office and pack up and to download any information they might need off personal information.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be very interested in having a look at what the practice is of governments around the region. I can tell you that that is not the normal practice in my county. I mean, there obviously are extraordinary circumstances, but the normal practice is we have good employees. You know, if we have to lose them because of, you know, financial reasons, that's a sad day for everybody. And we, you know, we want to treat them in a way that people, when times are good, will want to come back and work for us again. I find it amazing that this would be a routine way to treat people who presumably are employees in good standing.
Are you making a request from the staff?
Well, I'm just a member of the board, but, you know, I think it would be something that the board might, I mean, maybe other members here know differently in their own governments, what they do, but this doesn't sound to me like the way I really want to treat employees. I don't know, maybe other people have other thoughts.
I'm not quite sure how you would like us to follow up on this, Mr. Zimmerman.
Well, my request to my colleagues would be to request that Human Resources look into that and produce, you know, some kind of comparison that might inform us as to what usual practices are around here. I've, you know, kind of told you what my bias is, and I'd love to hear from my colleagues what their reaction is. As I said, maybe this is the way it's done in some other places, but it doesn't sound to me like, you know, the best way to be an employer of choice.
Mr. Linton.
And I clearly understand the question. I would just add, I would like those comparisons to also consider if there are any union restraints or requirements that also are used in the comparing data. That's all, just for clarification.
This would be an item that would either come directly back to the board as written material or something that would go to the Finance Administration and Oversight Committee.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
I just want to say I certainly agree with Mr. Zimmerman in terms of the abrupt nature of this departure, but we might want to also check and see how many jurisdictions permit 60 days of administrative leave by way of a severance, which if I understood correctly, that's what happens.
That's correct. It's 60 days, and then they have an opportunity to take, to actually bump some other individual out of the job. That's that what she was referring to as the pick process. That's correct.
Right.
So they could actually come back to work in another capacity.
And I think that Ms. Carter made this clear in your earlier responses, that you're now in that bumping period. You're in a 60-day period, and you haven't been reassigned, but you're, like right now, you're being paid, right?
Yes, sir.
Right, so that's important to note.
I believe that is a provision that
it's a provision
Ms. Kissel said is in the contract.
That's correct. Yeah,
which leads to the next question, which is, these are represented employees.
That's correct.
What is our policy regarding non-represented employees where we have a RIF?
30 days. We changed that 2 RIFs ago.
And
it was longer prior to that.
And are they also told same day?
Yes.
Back up?
Correct.
May I suggest that you respond to this in a report to the Finance Administration and Oversight Committee? Ms. Hutchins has agreed to accept that report on her agenda.
And just to be clear, it's a report on our practices as well as the comparison practices among the jurisdictions. Is that correct?
I think that was the request.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Carter.
Okay, I have one thing to say about wanting to have my notes, because it's basically just jogging notes. Can I get it typed up and submit it? And if I can, who would I submit it to?
You can submit it to the secretary.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes our public comment period. Agenda, I would like to add one item to the agenda under item 8. Before item A in the report of the Joint Development Real Estate Committee, add the Florida Avenue Joint Development Proposal as an additional item. Are there any objections or other changes to the agenda? If not, the agenda is approved as modified. We have 3 sets of minutes, January 28th, February 25th, March 4th. Are there any additions, corrections, or changes to those minutes? If not, those without objection, those minutes are approved as presented. A report by the Riders Advisory Council, Mr. DiBernardo. Welcome, Frank.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Benjamin and members of the board. It's my pleasure to deliver the Riders Advisory Council report for March 2010. First off, the council would like to thank the board of directors for authorizing public hearings that presented a wide variety of options to the public for balancing the FY 2011 budget. While we realize that many of the options presented in the hearings will ultimately not be supported by the board, we appreciate that the public is given the opportunity to comment on these options prior to any actions taken by the board. The Riders Advisory Council members are attending the hearings as they continue on, listening to comments from Metro Riders to help inform us for our own recommendations that we will be delivering to the board. Because we are still in the process of deliberation, our recommendations are not yet in final form. However, I can let you know that agreement seems to be forming around a recommendation that is more supportive of fare increases and less supportive of service cuts. We plan to have the final recommendation to you immediately following our April 7th regular monthly meeting. As always, the Riders Advisory Council is interested in knowing if you have any specific requests for budget feedback, and we welcome your attendance and participation at our meetings. With regard to the budget, one action that we have already taken was sending letters from the Riders Advisory Council to the various jurisdictions asking that they increase their contributions to Metro for the coming fiscal year so that service cuts will not be necessary. The Riders Advisory Council believes that if we are asking riders to absorb a fare increase, it is only right that we ask jurisdictions to contribute additional funds too, since Metro benefits the entire economy and life of our region, not just riders. Finally, the Riders Advisory Council would like to offer our best wishes to General Manager John Cato for his retirement from Metro. Metro has faced unprecedented challenges during his tenure, and his leadership under difficult circumstances has kept Metro moving forward. We especially thank Mr. Cato for his support and his work with the Riders Advisory Council over the past 3 years. Thank you, and please let me know if you have any questions that I might be able to answer.
Are there any questions for Mr. DiBernardo? Thank you, Frank. Really appreciate it. And we look forward to your recommendations on fares and service. This brings us to the report by the general manager, and just following on Mr. DiBernardo's comment, at the conclusion of that, I think we will have an opportunity to at least say a few words to Mr. Cato, because this is his very last board meeting with us. And so we'd be happy to hear a report, after which some of us may want to say something about your tenure here. John?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd like to depart slightly from the format of this report and ask Dave Kukachak to first highlight the employee of the month that we're recognizing, and ask that you join me in the center of the room to have pictures and to congratulate him.
If y'all could please proceed. Mr. Gamble, if he could please come up. Okay. Each month we spotlight a Metro employee who has done something exceptional. This month is no exception. On the morning of February 17th, at the tail end of the rush hour, as it was ending, Metro Rail train operator Michael Gamble was pulling into the Green Line train station at Fort Totten. Suddenly, he saw a customer fall to the tracks. He had to act fast, and he immediately hit his emergency brake to try to stop the train to keep the passenger from harm. Fortunately, due to his quick action, the train was stopped in time, and he then, with the help of two riders on the platform, rushed to get the customer off the tracks so that Metro Transit Police could take charge and evacuate this customer to the hospital. Operator Gamble's quick action certainly prevented a tragedy, and that's why he is our employee spotlight. Apologize, I don't have the certificate ready at this time. It'll definitely be delivered to him. Oh, here we go. Mr. Gamble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think that was a perfect lead-in to just a few comments I'd like to make. Obviously, this will be my last report to the board, and I'd like to spend the time to say goodbye to Metro employees and members of the board. To my fellow employees at Metro, let me begin by saying that even through all of the adversity that Metro has faced over the past 8 months, there is one thing that I have never doubted. I've never doubted your commitment to our vision and mission. And I feel and I know that I am fortunate to have been part of a team, of this team, for the past 3 years. Since the day I arrived at Metro in 2007, we have faced many challenges together. Together, we face this year's challenge of funding our operation. Together, we face the challenges of providing services daily and for special events. Few people understood the level of effort it takes to provide service for 1.2 million people each weekday. And for the special events, annual events like the Cherry Blossom Festival, July 4th, and the countless entertainment and sporting events in the region to include the Nationals, the Wizards, the DC United, the Capitals, and Redskins games. Even during the highest profile events like the visit of the Pope and last year's presidential inauguration, customers and observers in the media didn't truly see the level of effort required to make services come off smoothly. And that is a testament to the fact that you are doing it right. I do not believe that you chose the transit industry because you expect accolades of praise. I think you chose this industry because you wanted to make a difference, because you wanted to help people. That is certainly the reason that I chose this job. We do that every single day, and this region depends on us. And please don't forget that, because you are vital to the economic health and to the quality of life in and around the Washington metropolitan region. I will miss a lot of people who I've met here at Metro, especially my secretary who's leaving through the door, Debbie Porter. But I said when I announced my resignation, I think and I believe that the authority needs to take a different direction, and that it is best that someone else leads that change. Though I am leaving, I still have a stake in Metro's future, and would like to share with you what I see that future being. In the future, I see a Metro that has rededicated itself first to safe operations and second to customer service. They have certainly been goals through every phase, and they have been the goals through every phase of Metro's history. They are goals that we have made progress on together, but safety and customer services are jobs that are never done. I see a Metro where every employee has embraced the basic building blocks of our organization. At every level, each manager and supervisor will have stepped up to their engagement and those whom they supervise. Employees who don't supervise others will have stepped up their efforts to build a safe team with fellow employees and to make sure that we're making this agency as safe as possible for our customers and for other employees. I see a Metro where these employees who are nearing the end of their careers take newer employees under their wing and mentor them. I also see a future that Metro will rebuild its legacy of excellence. Metro will recapture past glory and pave the way for the region's future. Through that, you will have reminded everyone that excellence in safety and customer service is the true Metro way. I also want to thank the board for all the support that you have provided over the past 3 years and your wisdom. It has been very difficult challenges in each of these years. There were questions about how would we survive and economically fund our budgets. Through creative thinking, creative work, and very dedicated efforts on your part, we've been able to do so. The challenge that we have this year is one of the greatest that we've been confronted with. But there's no question in my mind that this board will look at various options and various approaches, and ultimately, we will make a decision that's best for this region. There's been a great deal of discussion recently that I have read and I've been asked about the aspect of governance and should it change. My position is a resident and a member of the community is first, what are you trying to change and what are you trying to accomplish? If you can specify the specificity of what it is that's not working or what it is you want to have happen and how that would happen, then work on change. But do not change just for the sake of change, but change to improve. Again, as we move forward, and I look at my past, I have no regrets about coming to this agency and the people that I work with. There are things that I wish that would have turned out slightly different. There's no question about that. All I could do was the best that I could do. And I want to thank you for your support and the support of this management team and all of the efforts over the year, over the years. And as I've said to the news media, I did not like some of the comments that you made. But you must keep and continue to keep factual news in the forefront so this region can understand not only the importance of this system, but the need for their support. So thank you. I am not leaving public transit. And if you wish to, at some point in the future, if you're looking for an elderly public transit official who has a consulting services, in 10 years I can come back and be that that person. I want to thank all of you for your time. I want to thank you for your effort. And while I look forward to some time off, I'm truly going to miss the place. Thank you.
Thank you, John, for those thoughtful and I know very heartfelt comments. It's going to be different without you, and I'm struck by the fact that this marks more than 30 years that you've been dedicated to and worked in the transportation field. And one of the things that I think is really important is, as a person who came up through the ranks, you have not forgotten those who are still trying to emulate what you have done. And one of the contributions you've made in the transit industry is to support that next generation of people and to help with things like Leadership APTA and to be a model for those people. It's a very, very important part of what you have been and what you have contributed, not only here at Metro, but throughout the transit industry. You came to us at a difficult time. Difficult in many ways, and I think you've experienced some of the extreme highs and some of the extreme lows of our agency. When we were founded as a transit agency, Metro was founded to build a rail system, not even to operate it, and not to operate bus. It was while the construction was about to start that the Congress passed on to this construction agency the responsibility to operate a bus system, which nobody in the organization had ever thought of doing. It was only after the construction had started that the Congress decided that maybe Metro ought to actually run the rail system as well as build it. And so for many, many years, we have been basically a construction organization. And one of the things that you recognized early on and one of the things that you changed was the need to move from being a construction organization, an organization that builds a transit system, to one that operates and focuses on customer service. I think that's extremely important. It was a very difficult change, and it's one that we have accomplished pretty effectively. You, as I said, have had some of the most interesting experiences in our history, starting out with a bunch of accidents that occurred just when you arrived, and you needed to work right away at trying to improve our safety, and I think that most of us would agree that that is what did happen and that you were successful. And in fact, during your tenure, we provided probably some of the best service we as an organization ever have. 17 hours of rush hour service, moving 1.5 million people for President Obama's inauguration was an incredible feat that occurred under your leadership and with many of the people in this room working very, very hard to have that happen. We also did things as an agency that reflected that kind of very special capability that I believe no other transit agency in the world can do. Providing large numbers of people with transportation to an event successfully and bringing them home. Other examples, Pope Benedict's visit to the United States, the opening of Nationals Park, President Reagan's funeral, all situations where you had to take a lot of people who didn't know how to use the system, bring them to a point successfully, get them to that event, and then take them home again. And that's very, very difficult. That was recognized, I believe, by the entire transit industry when you were awarded the Outstanding Public Transportation Manager Award last year. And one of the really sad things is that that was followed, or just after that was announced, was when we suddenly had probably the worst accident that we've ever had, and one that I believe you could not have anticipated or done anything about, but one that changed the whole nature of how we as an organization were relating to the public and to the press, and that in fact made that portion of your leadership much, much more difficult. I prefer to look at that positive side, all the wonderful things that you accomplished, all the wonderful things that happened, and all the ways that we as an organization really excel, and how the whole world has been able to look at us and say, they do things that nobody else can do. And we are, in fact, a model, very much due to your leadership over the last 3 years. And I want to thank you, and I'm sure other board members do also. Ms. Hudgens?
I'd like to also join in thanking Mr. Cato for his service here at the authority. Mr. Cato came to this board with an excitement and a dedication to transit, as had been his history. And I think he started out with the example of actually reaching out to the customers, to the stakeholders, and building that relationship. And this was described with the Riders Advisory Council. Mr. Cato was very comfortable with being in the midst of all of those that he served and worked with. And I think we've been very fortunate in having that kind of commitment. It's sort of ironic in that your recognition of Mr. Gamble is a part of showing you're leaving today. And I think it's recognized as something that I noted when you noted Mr. Gamble's service, is that too often we forget about the things that we avoid when it's a natural for things to happen every day going right. But unfortunately, when something is not right, that's where all the attention goes. And while you've had a lot of attention around the things that did not go right, there has been an amazing amount of attention, as Mr. Benjamin noted, that has gone well for us during your 3 years. And I've heard the customers say so, and I've heard the partners. I want to thank you for coming out to Northern Virginia, to the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission. And your meeting with us and the questions to you and your response to them, they recognized your commitment to this agency and your willingness to work with us. And so I'm always the one to say, don't forget to look at all the things that have gone well and not dwell too much on those that did not go well. Because for all of us, when we find ourselves in a challenge, we accept the challenge, we move forward from it, and we seem to make better of the fact that we've done so. So I think you have been a wonderful general manager for us. I wish you well in your retirement, and I do hope that you will indeed provide some opportunity to share that talent again in another manner for us, and wish you well.
Thank you, Ms. Hudgens. Others? Ms. Hewlett?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There aren't enough words, really. There isn't enough time to really to say all the accolades I really have for John Cato. You know, there was a commercial some many years ago about earning things the old-fashioned way, about and making things happen the old-fashioned way. You earned it. You earned tremendous respect. And it's actually ubiquitous, because everywhere you go, everywhere I go in the region, be it the District of Columbia, Maryland, Virginia, employees, citizens, just our customers, elected officials, the business community, the union, everywhere you go, even though despite our troubles, everyone has respect for John Cato. And a lot has gone right under your watch, as Mr. Benjamin indicated. So much has gone extraordinarily well on your watch, and you are to be commended for that. Some things did go wrong, and as Mr. Benjamin pointed out, really had nothing to do with you. But unfortunately, some things really did happen, and that has put a damper on your years here. But they don't come under your, they're not through any fault of your own. When I listen to the Riders Advisory Council, you've earned their respect. You've earned the respect of your executive leadership team, and the unions and everyone. And you have been accessible. You have been on 24/7. I know that I've called. I can imagine other members have called. If it's 6 o'clock or 6:30 in the morning, I know during the snow we called ungodly hours, and you are there. You are responsive 24/7 to everyone. Even when things do happen and go wrong, you're on the scene, and you're a stand-up guy. And some people have a way of saying, you know what, I can't be the front person here. Let's put you out front. Never happened. You stood out front. You were a stand-up guy every step of the way, and that's something I admire. And no matter what has transpired, the few bad things that have transpired, I have to give you all the credit in the world for your leadership, for your constant commitment, for being unwavering to your care and concern for our many, many customers, and for moving people throughout this region on a daily basis quite successfully. And I think... and actually, even the number of everybody's trying to do a farewell for you. I've never seen it. It's like take a number in terms of these farewells for you, because people are really, really sad to see you go. So there may come a point in time when we take you up on that consulting thing. You said when you're elderly, 10 plus years from there. So I do want to thank you so very, very much for your leadership. And for all that you have done for WMATA, I think you have really been an unsung hero, and it's about time we sing your song.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hewlett. Mr. Yule.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm going to be very, very brief. A lot's already been said, but just want to say to John that certainly it's been a wild ride, but anyone's perspective, but hopefully it's a ride that you've enjoyed, but certainly from crises come opportunities. And certainly your leaving has provided us the opportunity to look at who we are and what challenges we face, and certainly we'll be moving in a direction that will be pleasing to not only the employees here at WMATA, but to the riders and to the entire region. And as others have said, I know through my connections and involvement in many regional boards and commissions, there are others out there that many, who desire to emulate you and your leadership style for your charisma and your commitment and your dedication and your thoughtfulness and your frankness and your friendship and so forth. So on behalf of my citizens in the city of Alexandria, we express our thanks to you for your service. And as Casey Stengel says, when you come to the fork in the road, take it. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Mr. Linton?
Yes.
Okay.
I can't hear you.
Let me say, John, I'm going to miss you personally, and I know that all the employees here in this agency will miss you as well. I happen to come from Philadelphia, and one of the graduates of Philadelphia is Bill Cosby, and there was a slogan that just said, Bill Cosby used to say that I could have gone anywhere, but I chose to go to Temple. I think at the time... that you came to share your experience with us. You had opportunities all across the country. We are so glad and excited that you chose to come to work with us for the 3 years that you've been here. And yes, the times have been very difficult. There have been some beautiful and bright moments, ones that I hope you will treasure and keep with you forever. I know many of us will. Even during the difficult times, you were our bridge over troubled waters. I think many have stated that your very presence, the calmness and the authority in which you stood and provided guidance to this region during its most difficult time is one that I will always treasure. Even though that was a difficult moment for all of us, seeing you there at that location, taking command, providing guidance, providing assurance, gave me a sense of calm, and I think gave this region a sense of calm. So you were our bridge over troubled waters, and for that, you have paid a toll. I recognize that, that's been a very difficult time in your life, and anyone who's had experienced that knows that it's a troubling time, and we've actually been rewarded for some of the stripes and the scars that you've taken for that, and you've taken the bullet, and we have to recognize that. We also are very fortunate to have been to be at an authority which is kind of unique in the country. We've had two general managers who have been selected to be the general managers of the year. I don't think that's actually happened anywhere else, with Carmen Turner and John Cato. And I think that is a significant accomplishment for this authority, one that we should acknowledge in some special way. So I would hope that we provide a way to do that. I, being a youngster in this industry, have had the experience of knowing both of them, and both of them have played a very, very significant role in my view of public transportation, and I think they have some similarities in their caringness about the people that this industry affects and moves across this region. I wish you well. Take the time. You earned it. You need it. And I wish you well. And whatever you do and whatever I can do to support that, I'm here to do that.
Thank you, Glenn.
Mr. Albert.
John, I too wanted to add my voice of thanks to you for your service here at Metro WMATA. You will certainly be leaving WMATA in a much better place from which you found it. I think that's a testament to the strength of your leadership. As all of my colleagues have said in different ways today, you certainly serve here in some of the most difficult circumstances. And I think because of the leadership that you've demonstrated, the team around you have been very, very supportive. I would not like to have your job. You have 14 bosses sitting around this table, sometimes too often in your business. And then you have the general public that you report to on a daily basis. But through it all, you've done it with a smile on your face. Your calm, reassuring demeanor has certainly been very helpful to your team who I've interacted with over the last 14 or 15 months. So, John, we're certainly going to miss you, and please do not be a stranger to us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Graham.
Well, it's almost too emotional to say something for me. On the whole, I would have preferred serving as chairman of this board during your first year rather than your third year. But as I think of the third year and having been privileged to be pretty much up close to what you experienced, and certainly the day after day that followed June 22nd, when everybody's mettle was tested, and yours most particularly, I don't think there are not very many moments when I have been more proud of an individual and how he or she reacted under enormous duress and challenge as I was during those days with you. And as every member of this board knows, you know, I have been your steadfast supporter. We've had strong exchanges and very frustrating moments and days. as it seemed that the heavens had opened and all manner of pestilence had been visited upon us. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, I was very, very pleased with your performance, so much so that, as you know, I wanted you to stay another 3 years, and this board agreed that you should stay another 3 years. And we did so at a time when, we might have taken a pass. We might have just taken no action. But to the credit of this board, we acted. And we offered you a 3-year contract in addition to your first contract, and we did so in September. And I'm proud of that because we thought that much of you. And even though there were all manner of controversies at that time, I think also I want to remember the fact that when you became general manager, two things about that. Number one, when with all due respect to the regional interests in this board, and I do mean that, John Cato has very particular roots in the District of Columbia. And every time I think of John for any length of time, I think of his father, who for 38 years drove a taxi cab in the District of Columbia. And I think of your graduation from public school, Spingarn High School can be mentioned. And so there was a great feeling of, you know, coming home when you became the general manager here. In addition to that, this board, in what I consider to be an extraordinary set of actions, delegated all manner of authority to you almost immediately upon your hiring as the general manager. Things that I had seen in the time I've been on this board, we had wrestled, we had debated, we had asserted ourselves, but when you came, John, we were ready to say, here, run the railroad and the bus system and the metro access. So from the beginning, we had a great sense of confidence in you, and I just want to conclude by saying you have never failed in that regard. Your performance throughout the entire period, and speaking as somebody who worked very closely with you, not as close as others, but very closely with you, you know, I think you really proved yourself. You proved yourself under great adversity, and you will always be remembered as one of the great contributors to the success of this system. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And if I may, because the first time I met you, Mr. Graham, you talked about the do-nots, and that is not to introduce your family. So I'd like to introduce my sister, Sonia Cato, who's here, and Margo. And my brother-in-law, Phil.
My advice was, do not fail
to. Do not fail to. Okay.
Let me be very clear about that. Do not fail to.
Fail, you're right.
Mr. Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've only had the opportunity for a couple of months now to work with John in this capacity, and I have learned a great deal from what we've been able to talk about and observe. Obviously, I had the ability as a writer and a regional resident to observe his performance under some very difficult circumstances, and it stood up with as good a job as I've seen anybody do under those circumstances. I just also wanted to comment on John's leadership at the national level. He has been a major, major participant in the development of national policy that's supportive of this region, but supportive across the country, and I hope we'll continue to see you active in that role for years to come.
Mr. McKay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I joined this board 2 years ago, folks had continuously told me for years that the toughest job in the region is the general manager of Metro. And I didn't really believe them. But now I can say two and a half years later, I'm convinced. I'm convinced it's the toughest job in the region, and I'm convinced that very few people, can do it with the grace and diligence that John has. And I think what you heard in his comments today is a testament to who John Cato is. In his remarks, he gave us a vision looking forward of what you see Metro can be, what you were convinced Metro can be. And that's one of the things that I've always cherished is that John looks beyond today And while we've talked about his presence at various times, and I can tell you that as I go around, at least in my own jurisdiction, and we talk about all the troubles that have come about over the past couple of years, the constant response that I get from people is, thank goodness you've got John Cato. And that things have not gone exactly as many of us would have wanted. But at the end of the day, the confidence that people have in you as an individual has trumped any concerns that people have had about our system and events that have occurred. And I think that comment speaks for itself as thank goodness we had John Cato for the last couple of years. And you're a stand-up guy. You're forward-thinking. Frankly, I think this board did the right thing before I came in delegating a lot of authority to you, giving you that confidence. I believe we actually could have delegated more, and I hope as we move forward into our next general manager that we let the general manager be the general manager to give us the guidance necessary as a board. And I know there's not universal agreement on this board over that issue, but I feel very strongly about it. I've always had confidence in what you've done, John. It's been confirmed on the street, in our employees, in regional leaders across the Washington area. And I wanted you to hear that and know that. You will be greatly missed, and I hope that your advice is still a phone call away in the future. Wish you Godspeed in the future.
Thank you. Mr. Giancola.
Let me join the love fest here, John, for you. And I'll be briefer than the briefer comments that have been already provided. Thank you for your leadership. Mostly thank you for your humanity and your calmness under fire. I think Mr. Linton mentioned the calmness under fire. That was, to me, very noticeable. And a lot of these trials and tribulations you've had to face. You are a true professional, and certainly I will miss you very much. And I wish you well on your vacation in San Salvador. And as an old Navy guy, may you have fair winds and following seas. Thank you.
Mr. Solomon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Carlton Sickles used to sit on this board. I had the pleasure of serving with him for a while. And he would always say that all the good things have been said, but not everyone has said them. And what I want to say to you, John, is more on a personal matter. I think you are a success story. When you look back at your life, a lot of the things that you dreamed about doing properly, you actually did. You worked at every level of the transit industry and became deputy general manager in L.A. And one of your dreams, at least you said during your interview for the job on a sidebar conference, was to be general manager of WMATA. And you accomplished that dream. And you did a great job while you were here. Certainly there were some things that happened while you were here that you would get probably responsible for. But that's just the way the media is. We told you in that interview that this is a fishbowl. And everything you do, everybody will see it. Every day Metro is in the news. And every day John was on the radio, television, or in the news somewhere. So thank you. And on behalf of the riders, the citizens of Prince George's County, and all of its elected officials, we thank you for serving as general manager. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Cato, I too want to say thank you very much and tell you a very quick story. When I was campaigning last year, and I'm an at-large member, so I was able to campaign all over the city, and I was at Tacoma Metro Station secondhand as people were coming out. And one of the employees said to me, Mr. Brown, I'm going to vote for you, and I wish you luck, and I asked you to do one thing. And I said, what? He said, be like John Cato. And when I first got on the Metro board and shook your hand, I really appreciate your work. Thank you very much for your service. Thank you.
Mr. Zimmerman.
I think everything that's been said reflects my own feelings, and I'm not going to try and repeat the things that my colleagues have said, but just simply say that I do share all the sentiments expressed. Let me just say simply that, Mr. Cato, you saw this agency through what I think was the finest moment in its history, and also through what was probably the lowest point in its history. And through both, you conducted yourself in a manner that reflected extremely well both on you personally and on this agency. and for that, I thank you. It has been an honor to get to know you, a pleasure to work with you, and I want to thank you for 3.5 years ago agreeing to come to WMATA and to wish you all the best for the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
With that set of comments, we may not have said everything, but we've all said it. So, John, thank you very much for your service. We do appreciate it. Do you have anything else you want to say?
Actually, I think I've said enough, and I appreciate all the comments, and thank you.
Item on our agenda is a report by the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee. Mr. Zimmerman, you have one item?
I believe I do. As I noted, we had a speaker of public comment that was talking about signage and bus stops, and the answer to the question is a fairly complex one, reflecting the great diversity of the 12,000-some bus stops around the region, the vast and overwhelming majority of which are not, in fact, owned by Metro, and are actually owned in various ways by many different, by very many different folks. That has always been a complication. Customer Service Operations Safety Committee met on March 11th and has one action item to bring to the board today, and that has to do with the approval of bus stop guidelines, guidelines that we hope in the future will move the region toward more consistency and better information and fully address the kind of concerns that were raised this morning and that a great many people in the region share, especially those of us who regularly ride the bus service. There is a resolution that has been prepared and I believe reflects the various concerns that were raised in the committee meeting. The committee recommends its approval, and on behalf of the committee, I do so move, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a second?
Second.
It has been moved and seconded. Are there any comments on the bus stop guidelines? If not, all in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Passes unanimously. The report by the Joint Development and Real Estate Committee, Mr. Graham, and we have added a first item, the Florida Avenue Joint Development Proposal. Mr. Graham.
Mr. Chairman, we have discussed this as a committee in executive session. On behalf of the Joint Development and Real Estate Committee, I move approval of providing staff additional time to July 30, 2010 to negotiate a joint development agreement and lease for the Shaw. No, this is for the Florida Avenue Joint Development Site.
Is there a second?
For the purpose of discussion, I'll offer a second.
Mr. Downey seconds.
Chair.
Mr. Albert.
I move to table.
Mr. Chairman, I will stand back for the purposes of the second.
It has been moved to table by Mr. Albert.
I second.
And the second from Mr. Brown. With Mr. Graham stepping away from the table.
I have now resumed my seat, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Graham has returned for the purposes of the vote. Since it was an action to table, we move directly to the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. This item has been tabled.
Mr. Chairman, what was the vote on the item, please?
It was unanimous.
Thank you.
Your next item, Mr. Graham?
Mr. Chairman, we had two other items before us in our public session. Both were no-cost matters involving jurisdictions within the compact. The first was an action item to negotiate and execute an easement agreement with the District of Columbia for the Metropolitan Branch Trail Bridge at Rhode Island Avenue Brentwood Metro Station. The staff sought approval to negotiate and execute a no-cost easement agreement with DC for a bicycle pedestrian bridge. I move approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Albert. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. There are no noes. It passes unanimously. Your next item, Mr. Graham.
The second item was the approval to negotiate, was an approval proposal to negotiate and execute a memorandum of understanding with the City of Alexandria and the Hoffman Company for Eisenhower Avenue station improvements, bus loop improvements, and an expanded station square. The staff sought board approval to negotiate and execute a memorandum of understanding with the City of Alexandria, as stated. Again, this is a no cost to the Metro WMATA. I move approval.
Second.
This item was moved and seconded. Is there any comment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Another one unanimous. There is no report from the Finance Administration Committee. Administrative items, I'd like to take these individually. The first item is approval to initiate an award of contract for maps at rail stations and bus shelters. Motion to approve. Mr. Downey, is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Albert. Any discussion?
I have a question.
Mr. Downey.
Under this contract, will the neighborhood area map for downtown be updated? I had occasion to look at it the other night, and it's about 10 years out of date.
The answer is yes.
Any other comments or questions? We're ready for a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. No noes. It passes unanimously. The next one is the approval to modify contract authority to repair and rehab project system-wide. This is a job order contract, and it's labeled as number 3. Do I have a motion to approve? So moved by Mr. Zimmerman and seconded by Ms. Hutchins. I just have a question here. In this, it appears that you're actually not going to spend the money. You're just asking for authority within the contract. Is that correct? Because on the budget for this, it says no action, no prior approval, no remaining budget. So, and it says it's all subject to approval of operating and capital budget and receipt of funds. Is what are we actually doing?
What we're working on.
On this JOC phase 3, there was an option in this for the final approval. As we continue to look at our funds and our availability, at this point in time, if there is any funds, we would like to be able to go ahead and continue to use this JOC contractor methodology as we try to transition into the next phase, which the next item is for the fourth step.
And this is going to be applied system-wide?
System-wide. This applies to bus and rail.
So you are asking for authority to actually spend this money?
If it is available.
So it does have a funding impact?
Potentially, yes, it does.
If you're going to actually spend the money and you're asking for that authority, it would be nice if the funding impact showed that.
Okay.
This one shows no action, no funding. Are there any other questions? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. No noes. This one passes. Administrative item number 3, repair and rehab project system-wide. This is JOC 4. And it's for $15 million with $60 million in out-year subject to availability of funds. So a total of $75 million for job order contracts on repair and rehabilitation. Do we have a motion to approve? Okay. Ms. Hudgens moved approval and a second, Mr. Zimmerman. Are there any questions? Okay, all those in favor say aye. Opposed? Aye.
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 Sorry. Opposed? Say no. No noes. Finally, on our local 922 memorandum of understanding, Can I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Mr. Albert and a second. Second by Ms. Hewlett. I have a question. If I understand correctly, this item is to essentially bring Local 922 into accordance with Local 689 to date. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. Thank you. That's correct.
Now, there are currently some outstanding issues with Local 689 relative to pay. What is this particular action do relative to pay and to benefits compared to 689?
This basically gives the 922 employees the same lump sum, 2%, that the 689 employees as well as non-represented employees received in December of last year. And then it provides a reopening provision depending on the outcome of Local 689 for the remainder of the contract. It does nothing with the health and welfare, leaves it the same.
The same as they were, or
yes,
the same as 689?
The same as they were, which is just slightly above the average of what 689 employees receive in terms of contribution.
So what it does is nothing other than a 2% lump sum?
There's some, sorry.
For which funds are already available, you're saying?
Correct.
They have been accrued.
It's been budgeted. There are some minor non-economic components as well that mirror the 689 agreements.
Okay. So what you're saying is that there is money in last year's budget that was accrued that is being used for this purpose. Is that right?
That's correct.
Are there other items in last year's budget that have been accrued and have not yet been expended?
No, I believe the amounts that were accrued, we paid out under the 689, the 2% lump payment that we paid in last December.
I'm just noting the fact, yeah, there could be other things that were.
Well, we certainly accrue for other things besides wages. So if you're asking me that, I think you're narrowing it just to wages. Is that correct?
I'm trying to be relatively broad just so we understand. Are there accruals that have occurred for expenses that have not occurred?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I'm sure there are. I don't know what they are.
Okay. So there are funds that theoretically at least could be available because they've been accrued but not expended.
Theoretically, yes. I'd have to go back to see what that would be. If you're speaking about wages, or are you speaking about just other accruals that we make?
Just curious about how often this occurs within the budget.
I don't have an answer to that question.
Okay.
So.
All right. That's something to explore as we look at the shortfall for the 2011 budget.
Well, I understand. Yeah, I think we've actually explored that. But.
Okay. All right. Any other questions on this one?
So if I understand the answer correctly, this sets no precedent with respect to the 689 arbitration that's now going on. We'll wait the outcome of that before.
That's correct.
Any steps are taken with this union.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. This one passes unanimously. Report from D.C., Mr. Albert.
No reports at this time.
WSTC, Mr. Solomon, is he there? No, he's not. I would like to just report on behalf of Maryland and particularly Montgomery County on the death of Harry Sanders. Harry Sanders died about 2 weeks ago. He was a transit advocate within Montgomery County and within the region. He was a founder of the Action Committee for Transit and a tireless campaigner for the Blue Line. Who spent countless hours at just about every rally and just about every meeting supporting the Blue Line and supporting transit. And I just wanted to note that Harry is one of those people that we will remember, and there are an awful lot of people who mourn his loss. Harry was a true advocate for the things that we all stand for.
You mean Purple Line?
I'm sorry, Purple Line. Purple Line. Sorry, Purple Line. Thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Albert points out that blue and yellow
blue,
run
blue
together.
Yeah, right.
They make
they're purple, right?
You really need red.
Yeah, red. That's okay. Yeah, my apologies. Yeah, he was a purple. He ran around with a purple sweater and a purple T-shirt and signs at all times, and was at metro stations and every meeting we held on the purple one.
And every TPV meeting, pretty much.
And every TPV meeting too. Okay. Yes, and he truly believes, and that's important. NVTC, Ms. Hudgens.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to report that the NVTC commissioners, in receiving a report on the status of Metro, requested, and we have forwarded at their request, a letter to our delegation as well as to other members of the Congress in expressing their concerns for, one, the funding, and two, some of the challenges that we face, and asking the federal government to help and assist in terms of it being a major rider, employer, and the role that it plays. So that letter has gone out to our delegation, and we also expect it to go further, and we hope that they will acknowledge the concerns that we've raised and will continue to provide us the kind of support that we think that we need from the federal government in this region.
Mr. Zimmerman. Mr. Chairman, yeah, just to follow up on that, I think it's going to be important for us to follow up on that letter, and this board, I think, is going to have to begin weighing in as well. It reminds me, though, that we sent a letter to jurisdictions some weeks ago, and this very much relates, I was really reminded by Mr. DiBernardo, who spoke to us, you know, for the Writers' Council. Have we received any response from anybody to that letter?
If so, I'm not aware of one. Mr. Kara is nodding in the negative.
Well, here's my thinking, Mr. Chairman. We're sort of at a midpoint now in the budget process. We've begun the WMATA hearing process. Of course, all of us are in our own budget processes in our jurisdictions. My county has been holding hearings this week. We've had two, and we're going to have a third hearing tonight. And, of course, we're hearing people at our hearings, just as we heard today, basically asking us to open the box wider. We're sort of in this box where we're looking at some bad combination of big fare increase, cutting service, or drawing down capital funds, none of which are things anybody wants to do, and which for all kinds of reasons aren't good things to do. There's not enough fare increase even possible to cover everything we have to cover in this hole. But even if we did all that, basically, as people have said, and as Mr. DiBernardo was saying on behalf of the Writers' Council, you know, we're doing it all on the backs of the writers. And so they're asking us more and more to turn to the jurisdictions and to say, you know, some share of this, some bit of it, needs to come from an additional contribution. It's going to take a little bit from everybody. My concern is what mechanism we have for having that conversation. And as, you know, time goes by, you know, that opportunity will be lost. And I think it is very clear to all of us now that without some additional contribution from jurisdictions, then we will be doing something bad. The service cuts we're looking at would really be devastating. The fare increase is going to be big no matter what. It's a question of how big it's going to be. And drawing down capital is something we've discussed all the problems with doing that right now. The only way we make this a little less bad, the only way we make it something that hopefully won't set us in the direction of a downward spiral starting in July, will be if we are able to get the jurisdictions to step up and help out a little here. But I think we will need to do something to prompt that to occur. And, you know, I don't know when we take it up, and we're not here again for, you know, for a while. You know, I think, Ms. Chairman, we should be thinking about something like asking for a summit of the leadership of the funding jurisdictions to, you know, sit down and talk about it. In each of our jurisdictions, we're weighing budget choices. We have our own gaps to fill, and, you know, that's a problem. But we're not simply just cutting everything. You know, we're looking at our budgets and saying, overall, we're having to reduce, but some things are priorities. There are some areas we're putting more money into and finding ways to do it because that's what the need is right now. And every jurisdiction really should be able to weigh the value of the transit service that could be lost against all the other things and say, you know, it is or isn't worth something more to them. It does have some priority or not. It shouldn't be a default decision. So how do we get it to something where jurisdictions like my own, and I know my own is prepared to consider because of the high value we place on this, you know, making some difficult choices to be able to step up. But, of course, we can't do it unless everyone else is willing to do it. How do we get that conversation going to where people can, you know, collectively discuss it and say either yes or no, we can, we can't, we will, we won't, and not have it be simply a default decision.
Mr. Graham.
Well, I'm not sure why we're discussing this right now. I didn't see this item on the agenda, but since you've raised the issue, Mr. Zimmerman, let me say that for the District of Columbia, it is a far more challenging situation than for the County of Arlington. I mean, we're talking, and it's very important to keep this in mind because we're talking about much, much larger amounts for some of us than for others. And we're well advised to keep this in mind because at a time when we're all challenged in terms of our budgets, you know, the more we have to come up with, the greater the challenge, quite obviously. And for the District of Columbia, we're not talking about $3 million. We're talking about more than 10 times that amount. And while I support everything I can do to avoid service reductions, I support everything I can do, you know this, to avoid fare increases, you know, we've got to recognize the challenge as well. We're going to be, I'm chairman of the committee that considers the budget in the District of Columbia, and we're going to do and by the way, our oversight hearing of Metro WMATA is April 1st. I should have probably said that. But we're going to do everything we can, but I just want to be realistic about the challenge that we face, and I know our city administrator also sits on this board, and he is keenly aware of this as well. But we're going to do everything we can. I have received a number of messages from constituents in the District of Columbia who are anxious to see, you know, a greater share of this being paid for from subsidies. We increased our subsidy last year. The District of Columbia is sending $50 million additional capital money to this authority this year, if we ever get the check from the feds, you know, but perhaps somebody else can speak to that. But as soon as that check arrives from the federal government, D.C. comes in with $50 million. Maryland comes in with $50 million. And so it's, you know, I don't want to give anybody the suggestion that we're not already doing our fair share because we are. We're working very, very hard in D.C. To provide the support that this essential regional service merits and needs. And so I just wanted to add that point.
Mr. Albert.
Yeah, but I think Mrs. Zimmerman has a valid point. We're not going to meet as a group for a while, and many of us, some of us are going to be concluding our budget negotiations and presentations within the district within the next 2 weeks. And I really do believe that there needs to be a forum for, well, I know it comes to the council, but I've got to put pencil down on it. I'm just articulating my role in the government. But I think there has to be a forum for the decision makers on the executive side, particularly in the district, to get together and see if that's a possibility. And I think we need to take Mr. Zimmerman's suggestion of a forum seriously. It may be that we partner with one of our other regional bodies like COG. There is a group of county managers, administrators that meet. I don't know when our next meeting is. That may be a forum that we can look at. But I do think at the time when everyone is paying attention to the budget, that issue probably needs to be discussed and vetted in a forum like that sooner rather than later.
Ms. Hutchins, you want to say something? Ms. Hutchins.
As Mr. Zimmerman was proposing it, I was trying to figure out what could be an appropriate process, but I think, Mr. Albert, the FAO committee is a good source in that it brings the administrative folks, but it also might be a time to invite then the elected officials to some of those to participate in that, because while we are all in the same position in terms of looking at our budgets on the timing, I think it would provide that opportunity. Let me say that it is not an unspoken discussion in Fairfax County, but I think everybody will be delaying the decision by not having some sort of form, and I think that sounds like a really one easily to pull together without having to go outside of a process.
Mr. Zimmerman.
And I appreciate the comments and the reaction. Obviously, something's going to have to be given some thought, but I want to just for people to bear a couple things in mind. First, I'm not presuming what a number would be. Mr. Graham was using a very specific number, and I'm not presuming what that would be. My point is, if you were thinking,
as, say, the chairman of a committee that has to write a budget in your own jurisdiction. You know, among all the programs you're looking at, this is one where you would like to see a little more resource go in, some amount more, to alleviate the problems here. How would you go about doing that, given that you can't unilaterally do it? You'd have to know that I'm willing to put in a comparable amount, and so is everybody else. And that's one difficulty, that it's all proportional. It's really the same hit pretty much everywhere on a proportional basis. And we all have to go up or we go down together. So somehow the conversation has to involve those who have to make that decision, the policymakers, which is different in each jurisdiction. And you know, on the Maryland side, it's at the state level. So you know, it has to be somebody that's going to have to make a decision on writing the Maryland budget. You know, in the District of Columbia, you know, well, we do have representative the mayor and somebody from the council, but obviously a lot of people weigh into that. And they've got to be able to think about what the relative choices are and make a decision. In Fairfax, we have, you know, members of the Board of Supervisors that will make that decision, but we don't have the chairman, you know, and some other folks. You know, I have colleagues, obviously, who, you know, they haven't promised anything either, but they've said, you know, okay, we recognize this may be something we need to do. We're willing to look at it. We'll keep it on the table. They set their tax rate advertisement based on the need to keep that prospect on the table. So all I'm saying is I think the board needs to find a way to convene a set of people who are in the position to make that decision to at least have the conversation about, well, is there anything we can do this year, or are we just saying, nope, the riders are basically, and you know, you're stuck here. There's no way to even really effectively ask for any other help in this matter. So I would really suggest that we try to find a way to convene such a group very soon here while the decisions are still being formulated on each budget in each of the jurisdictions.
I want to, you know, make it clear. I mean, we are struggling with this issue. There's no question about it. But, and the mayor is struggling with this issue. We've had discussions about this. But what it's going to come down to for the District of Columbia, I can say this right now, and knowing the budget that I have before my committee, is what else are we not going to do in order to make this happen? Because there is no excess operations, appropriated dollars. We're not talking about capital in this instance. We're talking about operations dollars. And so we're going to have to look elsewhere in operations. And we want to hold on to the $50 million in capital that we're sending, you know, and we're holding on to that. It's in the bank. It's ready to go. But the operations dollars are going to be challenging, and that's all I'm saying. And I don't know, it's a question of saying, well, do you want to spend money on this or do you want to spend money on that, and making those types of priorities, because we have no excess capacity to do this. And but I'm not saying there isn't a lot of effort going into this. I think the mayor's budget comes to us on the 1st of April, and that'll be our first indication of what the ability of DC is. And then once it comes before the council and my committee, I mean, we'll look and see, you know, what else are we willing to forego in order to do this? And then we'll present that to the public and say, are you willing to forego this in order to do further support to Metro WMATA and avoid fare increases to some extent and service reductions to some extent? And we'll see how it goes. But that's the process. I don't know what beyond that I can say, but that's what it's going to come down to. And we're already anticipating that very same discussion about what we're going to give up in order to do this. Thank you.
Mr. Zimmerman, I have the sense that the board is in general supportive of your concept, but I doubt if we're going to come up with exactly the mechanism while sitting at this table at the moment. So let me suggest that we all think very hard and have individual discussions with one another to see whether there is a mechanism that will work and that we can, in fact, implement that would accomplish your end.
I thought it was important to raise the issue. Thank you.
Thank you. That brings us to the end of our agenda. I did want to announce that we recessed already. I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we had it already. Mr. Downey, this time we're not taking you by surprise. You're taking me by surprise.
Thank you. Just a couple of items. One with respect to the $150 million that we would hope to get in fiscal year 2011. That is in the president's budget. It will be acted on by the appropriators fairly soon and generally has been supported by the congressional delegation in the region. There is one question still to be resolved as to whether this is a special earmark. It is not, and I think we can make that point. It is a presidential request for something that is fundamentally in the program, so I think we can count on that. Secondly, we were reminded in the press this week of the sort of hidden federal contribution that by virtue of President Clinton's executive order, every federal employer in the region must offer the full transit benefit to each of their employees, and that's about a $300 million item that I hope will continue. Remember, it only continues by virtue of an executive order. Over the next couple of weeks, Mr. Acosta and I will be meeting with the GSA first, since they're the ones who appointed us. One of the questions will be, where are the other two people, and when will we get some help, but also where are things that we can work together with GSA on in terms of federal locations and the like. And then we will also be meeting with USDOT officials. Their major concern is safety. Not clear where their legislative proposal will be going, but we continue to talk with them on that. And also a concern of use of the capital funds and assurance that they also will be safety and state of good repair focused and keeping the system moving in the direction it needs to be going. So I'll report back after those conversations.
Mr. Chairman, your comment reminds me that I believe the employer side subsidy at $230 per month expires at the end of this year, the transit subsidy, and that we probably, as an organization and transit in general, needs to get busy to make sure that that is extended.
Yeah, that it would not be eliminated, but it would be reduced back. What had been put in place was parity between the parking subsidy and the transit subsidy. That is on the radar screen. We're hopeful at the national level that in some one of the many recovery bills that have been moving out of both houses, some of them moving out and coming back because they can't get it done, that this one will get picked up and appropriately extended.
Well, this is one where our staff certainly could become active, and I believe already is considering this issue.
Just quickly, Mr. Chairman, could you tell us the status of the $150 million congressional appropriation?
Talking about this year's?
This year's, the FY10.
It has been appropriated.
I know, but have we gotten, what is the status of the payment?
Have we asked for it?
The money already appropriated. Right. First installment. That comes to us through grants from the Federal Transit Administrator. We have to go to him with projects and with the normal justification. And one of the things I'll raise with Peter when I see him. It's not a cash payment.
But I guess the question is, have we applied for any or all of that money?
Yeah, that is a brand new interpretation. That is not the way it's described in the legislation.
Ms. Klein has joined us. Are you going to elucidate?
It's off. No. Ms. Klein, it's still off. Sorry.
Is it on?
Yes.
It's on.
The FTA has issued a formal notice of funding availability. We do have to go through the same process that we go through with other FTA grants, so we are in the process of preparing the grant application, and we'll be and are working with FTA on that.
Is it anticipated the monies will be in hand in this fiscal year?
In WMATA's fiscal 10?
In this fiscal year?
It is anticipated, yes, by the end of our fiscal year, the end of this June.
That the grant will be approved.
But the money grant will be approved, but the monies will be expended next year, in next fiscal year. That's your question.
So then, let me be clear about this. This is of no small importance. That means that the matching, we don't call them grants. I think we call ours appropriation.
Exactly.
That the matching appropriation from the various jurisdictions will not come due until the next fiscal year, which could be after October 1.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, there are some dates, and we're trying to determine the exact date, but I think it's before October. So let's wait until we get the exact information.
Well, we can answer that, I think.
You can?
Yeah,
okay.
Matt. Brown, or my capital budget director. Thank you.
Good afternoon. The funds are budgeted in the proposed FY11 budget that would begin July 1. So it's Metro's fiscal year is when we would plan to make the first expenditures.
We haven't approved that budget yet.
That's correct.
So, the trigger here is important. We need to research this, Mr. Chairman. This needs to be considered from several, there's several different angles here that are new news. This is news to the District of Columbia and maybe others. So can we request from the general manager and staff, you know, a succinct summary of just what the expectation is?
I think what you're being asked for is what is the potential expenditure schedule of the $150 million of local share associated with that?
No, it's the trigger that I'm asking about. Mm-hmm. It's the trigger. And the trigger, in my interpretation, is receipt, but maybe they'll discuss the trigger.
We don't receive the money.
We don't receive the money.
No, this goes on an expenditure basis, the same as the rest of our capital budget, so it gets spread over multiple years.
Multiple years?
Mm-hmm. Unless they manage to spend it all next year, next fiscal year.
This is, we need to talk about
this. Okay.
We need to talk about this. This is, the expectations were very different. Yeah.
And it is in the budget that is before us now as a fiscal 11 expenditure.
That's correct.
Right. Okay. Right. If there are no other comments, I again want to note that we did not complete our executive session. It went into recess. We will go back into executive session. We are not expecting any actions as a result of the executive session. They're purely information issues, and that brings to the end this board meeting.